Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We're very happy to continue our Friday feature, our regular Friday feature, Ideas Matter, checking in with the public humanities. 150 years ago this coming week was a ceremony that most Americans believe ended the Civil War, the Surrender Agreement at Appomattox Courthouse. What is wrong with the way we understand that event and the end of the war? Well, to answer that question, we welcome Greg Downs, Associate Professor of History at City College. Greg, thank you very much for joining us on Ideas Matter this morning. Very nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So when it comes to the statement of as how I just presented it, when we come to this 150-year anniversary, first of all, why do you think that is important?
I mean, I think it's natural to, at anniversaries, to look back and to reflect upon what happened and what it tells us about our nation. Certainly, if you look at the 50th anniversary of the Civil War, throughout the 19-teens, people, as some of the veterans were still alive, people used that to reflect upon what it meant that the nation had had a massive internal war, in which we now believe close to 750,000 people died, and also that it didn't have more civil wars, which is something that people at the end of the Civil War worried a lot about. If you look in the 1960s and the 100th anniversary, it was natural that at that point people reflected upon the relationship between the Civil War and the Civil Rights Movement, and the ways that some of the same questions of federal power and of Southern distinctiveness were playing out. I think at 150, we're obviously well past the time where there's any living veterans, and we're now at a different point where, you know, post-Civil Rights moment in certain ways. And so I think it's natural at the 150th anniversary that we ask different questions, including some questions about how the Civil War shaped the way the United States fights wars, and what kinds of tools it has available.
So I want to ask you some of those questions in just a moment, but let me get to the one we alluded to a moment ago, which is when we want to commemorate the end of the Civil War, you make the point that that's actually a harder question to answer than you'd think.
That's right. I mean, people, it's something that if you're a Civil War historian and you go out and talk, sometimes you'll get, you know, especially if you talk to younger audiences, you'll have students say, well, when did it end? And you have to say, in fact, this is an interesting exploration of how messy history is. If you look at many books, including books by historians or park sites and so on, you'll often see Appomattox or occasionally the later surrender near Durham, North Carolina, or occasionally the U.S. imposition of force in Texas in June of 1865 as the end of the war. And those reflect one way of thinking about wars, which is thinking about wars as battles. And, of course, it's natural we think about wars as battles. After the imposition of U.S. force in Texas and after a treaty with Stand Watty, a Native American Confederate in Indian Territory, there were no more battles between uniformed U.S. and Confederate soldiers. But, in fact, that's not all of what wars are. Wars are also exceptional times, as we know now, where the U.S. can sustain itself, or any country can sustain itself in a kind of state of legal emergency in order to accomplish things that it cannot accomplish things in peacetime. And if you look at it in that way, when did the United States return legally to peace? Well, then it's a much more difficult question. And my answer, which is the answer that Congress at the time gave, is that the Civil War actually ends as a legal state in 1871, that the war after Appomattox takes longer than the war before Appomattox, and that we have what John Fabian Witt, a terrific legal historian, calls America's 10-year war. And if we cut it off in the middle at the end of battle time, we misunderstand what came out, what happened after Appomattox, and what it tells us both about the end of slavery and the Civil War and the what wars are.
So by looking at that date and changing our answer to that basic question, does it change the outcome at all? Does it change the outcome of the war? Does it change what the war accomplished?
Absolutely. When we focus on Appomattox, a lot of times we focus on these myths, many of which are based on very, very thin evidence or were entirely made up, of these two, this gentleman's agreement, Grant and Lee shaking hands, and then many things that Grant later said were utterly invented. Did Lee hand his sword to Grant and Grant gave it back? Was there a marching salute in which the U.S., honored the Confederate soldiers? For many of these things are central to an American mythology of a family reunion, kind of the prodigal sons coming home, and that the surrender agreement then is the kind of rebirth of a family portrait. But there's things that are lost, and in certain ways, obviously, that's true. But there's certain things that get lost, both historically and in other ways, by that portrait. Not just that it doesn't capture what happened on the ground, where Grant absolutely refused Lee's request to move to peace, and said that if Lee wanted peace, then they would continue fighting, and where Grant insisted on continuing the powers of war. But it's also who gets left out of that family reunion, which is the crucial actors during the war of ex-slaves, freed people. And they're a key part of why the war can't end at Appomattox. Because if the United States had declared peacetime at Appomattox, well, in peacetime, as we all know, judges that what the U.S. government is based upon in part is the idea that the military can't tell judges and sheriffs and mayors what to do. But if that was the case in April of 1865, then there is absolutely no question, we know for certain, that what would have happened is that in the southern states they would have done everything they could, because they're already doing it, to sustain slavery. At Appomattox, about 2.8 million people were still enslaved. Slavery wasn't dead. And even if they couldn't sustain slavery in its entirety, the judges, sheriffs, and so on were going to do everything they could to create an absolutely fixed caste system in the South. And the only way for the U.S. government to overturn that was to rely upon the military to come in, to learn from freed people who would flock in and explain what was happening, and to use their powers to overrule laws, to arrest civilians, even to try civilians in military courts, to suspend habeas corpus, to do things they could never do in peacetime. And that raised a major problem, which is how much power should the government give the military over its own people? But the other side of the dilemma was that if they didn't give this power to the military, slavery would have survived, quite possibly as actual slavery, and if not as an even more rigid caste system than developed in Jim Crow. So in that sense, we get a clearer sense of what the war was about. People have always argued about whether the Civil War was about slavery or about states' rights or tariffs. But states' rights, tariffs, secession, all that stuff was decided at Appomattox. What wasn't decided was the ultimate end of slavery. And the U.S. government's commitment, pushed on by freed people themselves and by abolitionists, to make sure that slavery died, is why they extended the war past Appomattox.
Gregory Downs is an associate professor at the City College and Graduate Center, CUNY, and is the author of the just-published After Appomattox, Military Occupation and the Ends of War. Gregory, thank you very much for joining us for Ideas Matter this morning on the Roundtable.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great weekend. Thank you. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.